welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And I've not done this before, but we've got Paul Venable with us again. You know, my content reader contributor, and I will just say the guy that really kind of helps ask the questions that I wouldn't even think of. And so, welcome back, Paul.
Thank you.
And so, we're going to air this show tomorrow, and I am pleading with you to actually present this show to your family and friends who realizes that this nation really is not just in a rut. We're sliding down the hill into the abyss. And so I don't know if you've ever seen, in a movie or maybe even in real life, where like a skier or somebody that's on a mountain and you can see that they're on the sheer slope and down, below the slope is a sheer cliff that person is sliding down and about ready to fall off. In other words, when you talk about people that are at the precipice of falling off, it may require a push to get them to fall off. But in this particular case, it's not a push. Momentum is already working against you, and you're going to fall off unless you really start fighting for your life. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I see that's where we are as a nation. We're so divided on so many different things where I believe we all could unite, especially those good red-blooded Americans that want liberty. There's just a small group of people. It is not even a majority, not even close to a majority, that really want to destroy our Constitution. They want to destroy our liberties. And unfortunately, the majority of the people don't see this. And they don't see how we've been set up on this slope to where we're sliding down this hill. And so here's my question, because out of all of the days of the year that we as Americans, live through, and sometimes we live through together, right? On a holiday, we live through it together. Veterans Day, as a nation, we thanked veterans. And so on Friday is my special message for Veterans Day that didn't get aired because of big tech shutting me down. my ISP shutting me down, I should say. But anyway, because my opinion on that, I think, is a different one, and hopefully you'll find it refreshing, because veterans, any good veteran should not need to be thanked for what they did. If they do, then I question why they joined, because anybody that joined because of the cause of liberty as a duty to, to serve, the last thing we want to hear is you to thank us. Actually, you need to listen to that, because there are things you can do that will actually thank us, because you're proving that you do care. In this context, to Thanksgiving tomorrow, what we're doing is, as a nation, we're taking aside a day to commemorate something. But the question is, what is it we are commemorating, right? I mean, so Paul, where did this ceremony, or we're recreating something. What is it we're recreating?
I believe we're recreating what's, I think, commonly known as the first Thanksgiving, where the Pilgrims and the Native Americans met and feasted together, right?
Okay, yes. So in other words, when we look at America, we see, each of the states were founded on different principles, like, the southern states were founded on economic principles, of growing and people coming to, be able to start a new life and to have a real opportunity to have a bunch of land and to be productive. In other words, there was this huge movement of people that wanted to make a better life for themselves by coming to America and growing, you know, tobacco, growing food, and, you know, getting kind of away from England and the castles and so forth. And so, you know, there was that, but there was also another group of people that were leaving England because of religious persecution, such as Cromwell. And I'll talk about that on Christmas when I do my Christmas show, but you're right. It was the pilgrims. And as a matter of fact, you know, I go through this, I read this every year, and this is my little stint on the pilgrims, or what I would call the Puritan Thanksgiving. By the way, it's not the first Thanksgiving, but this is the one we recognize. The pilgrims who celebrated Thanksgiving in America were fleeing religious persecution in England. In 1609, a group of pilgrims left England for the religious freedom in Holland, where they lived and prospered. After a few years, their children were speaking Dutch and had become attached to the Dutch way of life. This worried the pilgrims. They considered the Dutch frivolous and their ideas a threat to their children's education and morality. So they decided to leave Holland and travel to the New World. Their trip was financed by a group of English investors, the Merchant Adventurers. It was agreed, and that's what they were called, the Merchant Adventurers. It was agreed that the pilgrims would be given passage and supplies in exchange for their working for their backers for 7 years. In other words, they came over as
indentured
servants. Right. On September 6, 1620, the pilgrims set sail for the New World on a ship called the Mayflower, and there was actually a couple of other ships. They sailed from Plymouth, England, and abroad were 44 pilgrims who called themselves the Saints, and 66 others who called themselves, the pilgrims called them, the Strangers, quote unquote. The Saints and the Strangers.
These are all on the same boat?
Yes, they were all on the same boat. So there was literally, 110 people on one boat. And the long trip was cold and damp. It took 65 days. Since there was the danger of fire on the wooden ships, the food they had to eat was cold, and many passengers became sick, and one person died by the time land was sighted on November 10th. The long trip led to many disagreements between the Saints and the Strangers, and after land was sighted, a meeting was held and an agreement was worked out called the Mayflower Compact, which guaranteed equality and unified the two groups. They joined together and named themselves the Pilgrims. Although they had first sighted land off Cape Cod, they did not settle until they arrived at Plymouth, which had been named Captain John Smith in 1614. It was there that the pilgrims decided to settle. Plymouth offered an excellent harbor. A large brook offered a resource for fish. The pilgrims' best concern was attack by the native Indians, but the Patuxs, I guess is the name of the Indians, were a peaceful group and did not prove to be a threat. Now, to be clear here, one of the things that I'm glossing over is the fact that when they got to America, they realized that they were so late that the agreement, the terms of the agreement that they came over originally were no longer applicable because they were supposed to have arrived in time to be able to settle and, you know, grow food and so forth. And now they realize that they're looking at November in landing in Massachusetts. How much opportunity do you have in feeding yourself and everything else? They realized that they were in a dire situation, and it was about survival. So they actually broke their compact and made a new one with these Strangers, which they basically all considered themselves equal. In other words, they were no longer indentured servants.
Okay.
They agreed to be indentured servants, but they didn't. And then everybody knows the rest of the story. That when we look at what the pilgrims did, they created a communal environment to where everybody contributed their labor to the whole. which actually created another term called the tragedy of the commons. Now, have you heard of that, Paul? Do you know what that means?
I have heard of the tragedy of the commons.
So what is that? What does that mean? Go ahead. What's that mean?
Isn't there a book? The tragedy of the commons was that eventually the system didn't work. It failed.
Right. So what ended up happening? The tragedy of the commons is where there was a group of people, greedy people, that so you had these ideologically committed people that says, this is all for the betterment of all of us. There were those people who said, you know what? Screw that. I am going to go and harvest early so that we have more than what we need because I don't see enough food in them their patches of food we're growing to actually see us through. So they actually went out in the middle of the night and pillaged the gardens and brought food back for themselves, and they kept that for themselves. And so when it actually became time to harvest for everybody else, there wasn't enough for everybody else. And what ended up happening was people didn't have enough food and they literally died that coming winter. And they lost a lot of people because of this concept of sharing these crops and sharing everything in a communal effort. And I forget who the governor was, but the governor that actually, you know, broke the compact and said, look, this isn't working either. Mm-hmm. We don't have, and it was may have been the strangers who actually didn't abide by this communal ideology because they weren't convicted. You know, so nobody actually says who it was.
Okay.
But you would think ideologically the Puritans would be really hard set in doing what was right, what they all agreed upon. And it would have been those capitalists, these venturists that wanted to, you know, actually get ahead. And so what ended up happening was these people died, and that may have weighed on the strangers that were in this compact so much so that the area, the state or the colony became so fixated on the Puritan faith because they kind of all basically, you know, when you start going to somebody's church, you know, if you've never been to church and you weren't religious, you were inclined to have that, you know, influence you to bring you to, oh, I'm a Puritan too now because you agree with them. So I think that's what ended up happening. I believe it was the strangers that were the ones that violated it. And I believe that over time, they all kind of incorporated this idea. And isn't it interesting that, because this was true socialism, they were trying to actually invoke voluntary socialism, and it didn't work. And now when we look at the Puritans and how they migrated from standing up for the revolution, you know, and not allowing, you know, tyranny to weigh upon them, look at Massachusetts today. I mean, they've gone full circle.
Mm-hmm.
Voluntary socialism. I mean, they were one of the first states to have voluntary, you know, or mandated health care and so forth. Now, getting to the real first Thanksgiving, because this is really where it comes down to what we want to do. And so nobody understands that the actual first Thanksgiving occurred in on December 1619, and it was really the first time that there, because even though the Mayflower came in 1614, it was named, you know, Plymouth Rock and all of that, it wasn't until a few years later where they actually had that first Thanksgiving where they learned to, you know, they had to put aside socialism and everything else. And I forget what year it was, but the very first Thanksgiving on American soil actually happened in Virginia. And Captain John Woodleaf is the one that conducts the first American Thanksgiving upon the safe arrival in Virginia. So contrary to popular belief, the first American Thanksgiving was in Virginia, not Plymouth, Massachusetts.
Why do you refer to it as the first American Thanksgiving when they're both on this continent?
Well, so this one actually occurred before the one up in Massachusetts.
Okay.
So there's many people to think that that was the very first Thanksgiving when it wasn't. And most people think that that was the only Thanksgiving, and it's not. As a matter of fact, it was common that, you know, these religious people, because they were all religious when they came here, they all gave thanks. But here's the interesting thing. We understand the pilgrim Thanksgiving is one to be a feast and, you know, a festive occasion of giving thanks. Now, in contrast to that, on December 4th, 1619, after 10 weeks at sea, 38 English settlers arrived at Berkeley Hundred, about 20 miles upstream from Jamestown. And on that day, Captain John Woodleaf held the first service of Thanksgiving. This is December 4th. And the newly landed settlers fell to their knees to give thanks for their safe survival and arrival to America. The Charter of Berkeley Hundred stated, quote, "We ordain that the day of our ship's arrival at the place assigned for a planticon in the land of Virginia shall be yearly and perpetual kept holy as a day of thanksgiving to Almighty God," close quote. Thus, the real first American Thanksgiving was actually held before the pilgrims had actually gotten to and had created their feast. Even though they had gotten to Massachusetts before this, they hadn't come to the point of giving thanks because they had a few lumps and bumps that they had to learn along the way. After several years, the site became the Berkeley Plantation, and this was a long traditional home of the Harrison family, where they actually recognized on an annual basis this Thanksgiving, and they actually encoded that. Now, when we contrast this to the Puritan Thanksgiving, it was a one-time thing. They didn't do it on an annual basis like they did in Virginia. So why all of a sudden, as a nation, would we, you know, give thanks for, and here's the whole point. You know, everybody around the neighborhood celebrates an occasion like Christmas differently, or what have you. Why would the nation adopt the small religious group in Massachusetts? Why would we adopt that Thanksgiving over the Virginia Thanksgiving, or over what many of the other states were doing? Is because most of the other states kind of adopted their own regional Thanksgiving, and they were more like Virginia than they were like Massachusetts. Because, see, if you really think about it, in Massachusetts, it was a recognition of the failure of socialism and the beauty of unifying, not in labor, but unifying in respect and harmony with everybody, you know, in a good economic cause. In other words, when we look at it, it was more of a capitalism and the implementation of a free market in Massachusetts, where it was mercantile, maybe everywhere else, because if you remember, many of these colonies were established to grow very specific crops for the king. So it was a mercantile system. Up in Massachusetts, that actually was a different situation where they actually implemented capitalism. So maybe that's why they chose that. But really, when you think about it, it's a celebration of, isn't that gluttony? And isn't the Thanksgiving, the Puritan Thanksgiving, something that actually doesn't really invoke God?
I would expect it to, being the Puritans, right?
Well, you would have thought so. And it's not that it doesn't, but where, when we learn in history, where was this really fervent fasting, you know, that typically, and when you look at the nation giving thanks, it's never done in gluttony. And as a matter of fact, this is where you come in. Because when the nation had to decide that it needed to give thanks, actually, after the Constitution was framed, and in the very first year that Congress met, in the very first year of this government that got created by that Constitution, as the states committed and ratified this Constitution, a unanimous call, and I mean this, a unanimous call. There wasn't one dissent in either the House or the Senate. It was unanimous. They all requested that George Washington make a proclamation of giving thanks. And this actually became the first and the national repeat of giving thanks. In other words, the nation's first Thanksgiving that they actually pulled off had nothing to do with really either of these organizations, or I should say any of the Thanksgivings that were occurring at that time. In other words, they gave us a whole new paradigm of Thanksgiving. And so what I'd like to do is, this is where I'd like you to kind of read, because this is George Washington's proclamation as a national Thanksgiving. So go ahead.
Okay.
Are you ready for this?
I am. Let's see. Hang on. With First American Thanksgiving, First Thanksgiving United
States. You'll find it on proclamation. Page 3. There you go.
Oh, I've got it. Okay. Yep. You ready?
Go ahead.
All right. The first Thanksgiving in the United States under the U.S. Constitution, George Washington Thanksgiving Proclamation. Proclamation, a national Thanksgiving. Whereas it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore His protection and favor, and...
Hold on. We want to go through this a little, you know, with a little bit of analysis all the way through this. So here... He is absolutely delineating that it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God. Wow. So in this very first Thanksgiving, they chose, and actually they had other Thanksgivings after this, but this was his first proclamation of Thanksgiving. And then the nation kind of repeated this for a little while. And somehow we drifted, but keep going. What's the next one?
Okay. And whereas both houses of Congress have, by their joint committee, requested me,
quote,
to recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many and signal favors of Almighty God, especially by affording them an opportunity peaceably to establish a form of government for their safety and happiness, end quote.
Okay, so he's calling for them, and this is, he's quoting what Congress asked him to do, to recommend to the people of the United States of a public thanksgiving and prayer. Right? I mean, so this is what they requested that he do. Okay, so now therefore is what he's doing. So now he's responding or giving you the proclamation. So there you go. Go ahead.
Now, therefore, I do recommend and assign Thursday, the 26th day of November next, to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being who is the beneficent author of all the good that was, that is, or that will be.
Okay. Hold on.
Go ahead.
Because we got less than a minute left. And so I think we could just stop right there. But right here, he's basically saying, because there's all these little parts that are really making a very specific point that, you know, in November, the fourth Thursday of the month is recognized as Thanksgiving. We still do that today. We still recognize. So the tone that they created was set right here. It was a one-time Thanksgiving with the Puritans, and they just kind of repeated it. But in Virginia, they actually established it as an annual thing, which is why Washington basically started this, and it became an annual thing. And so he's really identifying who, and we'll be right back when we come back, folks, to identify who is it that we're recognizing. Is it we're recognizing... You know, the crops, or what is it that we're recognizing and thankful for? Are we thankful for the food that we're growing, the money that we're making? What is it that we're thankful for? And so we'll be right back after this promo.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so it's kind of becoming obvious here exactly who or what, actually what, we're being thankful for and to who we're giving thanks. Now, when we look, I don't see the pageant, the Thanksgiving pageants even coming to this acknowledgement, if you understand what I'm saying. So clearly he's talking about that glorious being who is the beneficent author of all the good that was, that is, or that will be. Now go ahead.
That we may then all unite in rendering unto him our sincere and humble thanks for his kind care and protection of the people of this country previous to their becoming a nation. For the signal and manifold mercies and the favor, able interpositions of his providence in the course and conclusion of the late war.
There you go. So they're actually he's actually recognizing his interpositions, right? His signal and manifold mercies and the favor, able interpositions of his providence. So, I mean, does it sound to me like, you know, they're taking a lap, you know, or doing a dance at the end of the end zone, or taking a victory lap around, you know, around the course so that, you know, they can, you know, show, hey, we look at what we did.
Not at all.
But,
far from it.
But many people on Thanksgiving are going to actually watch the Circus Maximus and the football games of glory, where, you know, they can see, you know, people taking credit for the great plays in winning the game or, you know, in scoring and so forth, right? Is that,
you are correct.
Is that not contrary behavior to what he's talking about?
It certainly is a distraction.
Wait, here's an opportunity that these men could have done a victory lap. Look at what we did. And instead, the Congress and the president at the time acknowledged that they had nothing to do with it, that they gave all glory to him.
Imagine also what it would take for a Congress to vote unanimously on anything.
Right. Absolutely. Right. And, you know, okay, none of these
this
men
particularly.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I was just saying this is particularly unique.
It is.
Such a thing would happen at such a time. And by the way, because of the proclamation, because it was unanimous, guess what? The president had the authority to do so.
Yes. And let me just say this, that they didn't go off and create, we did that hats, you know, or, you know, look at what we did and start selling paraphernalia. Hey, get, you know, like every time when they signed the Constitution, they all sold their pens or gave out their pens to other people. You know what I'm saying? Oh, I got a pen, you know, of, you know, Madison signing the Constitution. Well, I got John Hancock's. You see my point? They all shared the pen.
I hear you.
And they didn't. They didn't glorify the pen. They glorified God. Where is that pen, that quill that they used to actually sign that document? Who has that?
I don't know. I mean, if it still exists, it could be in the library.
But my point is, today, when the president signs an executive order, when the president signs a bill that, you know, like Obamacare, I mean, Obama basically, I think, had like multiple pens that he used to sign so that he could get, so if they became history marks.
Right.
Artifacts of our history. These men were doing God's will, and they weren't cared. They weren't caring about, you know, these artifacts. Anyway, keep going. What's the next? Go ahead.
For the great degree of tranquility, union, and plenty which we have since enjoyed, for the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been enabled to establish constitutions of government for our safety and happiness, and particularly the national one now lately instituted.
Right.
For the civil, okay.
Right, so he points out the rational manner in which we have been enabled to establish constitutions of government. And then he says, particularly the national one now lately instituted. I just want to make sure that everybody understands that they're recognizing this national constitution as something that we all need to be thankful to him for.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. For the civil and religious liberty with which we are blessed and the means we have of acquiring and diffusing useful knowledge, and in general, for all the great and various favors which he has been pleased to confer upon us.
Now, you notice the capitalism, right? Every time he uses he, every time Washington mentions him, it's a capital H.
Correct.
His kind care. So he's being sure. You know, there was a reason why they didn't call our Creator God. These men didn't refer to him as God, because they had the reverence and understanding that using that word could be perceived as blasphemy. And now it's just a, you know, everybody says OMG all the time.
Right. So it was a reverence for his name. They typically used Creator.
Or the divine hand of providence.
Correct.
Or he with a capital H. Or him with a capital H. His with a capital H.
Right.
Yes. Okay. So in this next one, now there he's going to cover what the nation should be doing. And this is where they invent football and the mighty pastime of America. Go ahead.
And also that we may then unite in most humbly offering our prayers and supplications to the great Lord and ruler of nations, and beseech him to pardon our national and other transgressions, to enable us all, whether in public or private stations, to perform our several and relative duties properly and punctually.
Stop right there. So he's basically calling on the nation to repent, for pardon our national and other transgressions, to enable us, whether in public or private stations, to perform our several and relative duties properly and punctually. Wow. I mean, in other words, we're beseeching and repenting. Keep going now.
Okay. To render our national government a blessing to all the people by constantly being a government of wise, just, and constitutional laws, discreetly and faithfully executed and obeyed, to protect and guide all sovereigns and nations, especially such as have shown kindness to us, and to bless them with good governments, peace, and concord.
Wow, so, okay. So here he basically goes and says, to render our national government a blessing to all the people by constantly being a government of wise, just, and constitutional laws. and to protect and guide all sovereigns. So this is actually a thanksgiving and prayer to protect all sovereigns of the world and all governments of the world. Now, that's really reaching out there. I mean, that is, right? Are we not to pray for our enemies and pray for, you know, all?
That is, you might call that the spirit of the gospel.
Yes, and to bless them with good governments, peace, and concord, where you left off. So, in other words, he's wishing to bless all governments. This is where I just introduce Article 4 here, folks. It was the Creator's plan, the divine hand of providence plan, that this Constitution would go to all governments, which is why Article 4 gave and empowered a responsibility to Congress to actually allow states to join this union, that they may be admitted into this union. It was his plan. This is why Wilson and the progressives tried to create something different for the nations to coalesce on, to acquiesce into, and into a compact that would not be one of liberty, but one of subjugation. Had the Organic Act actually been successful in moving and putting the Constitution aside and actually subjugating the United States the way the globalists wanted it to, the League of Nations never would have been created.
It had not been for the Organic Act, right?
Well, so I'm just saying that the Organic Act didn't give them what they thought that they could get, because most people did not understand this Constitution. Most people didn't understand that the states were the parties to it, which is why they thought that they had finally won when they actually incorporated government and went down this path of shifting government into something completely different, unconstitutionally.
Most people still don't understand that, GR.
No, I know. I get that, but that's why the sovereign citizen movement is successfully convincing people to see they did it. That must mean it's legitimate when it's not. That's the point. That's the point, because even though the states may have been co-opted into corporations, doesn't mean that they're still not states. It doesn't mean that they're still not parties to the compact. Because whenever the federal government wanted to seek more power, they had to amend the Constitution, and they did. They still followed it, because even though they created a different system, they didn't really do it by an amendment, and which most people kind of understood, which is why America, you know, is kind of being torn in, you know, apart by the globalists that are saying, no, you got to go this way. But the people say, no, this is the way, you know, you can't take us that way. This is the only way to do that. And they go, well, hold on, we're already there. We've already created these corporations. And this is how the Constitution is frustrating the devil.
Right.
And there's nothing they can. So that's why they had to create and get us to buy into and surrender our sovereignty to the United Nations. First it was the League of Nations, and then ultimately, because that failed, ultimately it was the United Nations.
Well, you know, GR, the Constitution still stands in the way of complete tyranny in the United States. And if it breaks here, it breaks everywhere.
Right. Okay. So going into the last part of this, go ahead.
Okay. To promote the knowledge and practice of true religion and virtue and the increase of science among them and us, and generally to grant unto all mankind such a degree of temporal prosperity as he alone knows to be best. Given under my hand in the city of New York, the 3rd day of October. I don't have the year there.
Yeah, that's okay. It was 1789.
Okay.
Okay, but here's the interesting thing. One, it kind of helps people place context. Oh, this happened in New York. This didn't happen in D.C. This didn't happen in Philadelphia. This happened in New York. Because the government first, you know, first couple of years, As a matter of fact, I think they were they still in New York or were they in Philadelphia when Washington finally resigned? I think they were in, because they didn't move to D.C. until John Adams. And I believe Thomas Jefferson was really the first occupant of the White House, if I remember correctly, because it took a while to build. But nevertheless, so let's now look at it this way. What he's asking is the nation to actually do something. And why is it that he's asking us to basically take a day aside and to give thanks and humility, pray for others, and to serve, to basically get out and, you know, and show kindness and tranquility and to serve him? Why? Why would the nation actually take a day of, you know, humility, thanks, fasting, actually, because that was a part of the Thanksgiving process, was fasting, not eating. Why?
Well, so, remember.
Go ahead.
Remember that the American colonists should not have been able to defeat the most powerful military force on the planet at the time. They recognized as it was happening that God's hand was involved in the fight for liberty.
Okay, so you're not in sync with me, but that's okay. That's okay, because I'm in a place that really, you know, I want to hit this. And it's right there in the now, therefore. Now, therefore, I do recommend and assign Thursday, the 26th of November next, to be devoted by the people of the United States to the service. He wants people to be devoted to the service of the great and glorious being. In other words, he's asking us to serve and to humbly, to prostrate ourselves to him. Now, let me ask you this. Whenever you're blessed or whenever you do wrong, you know, there's certain processes, right? This is really a religious process, like a ceremony or ritual or something like that. So why would somebody religiously, why would they fast and pray and, you know, prostrate themselves? Especially
they would either be expressing gratitude or seeking aid.
Okay, so let's look at the fundamental doctrine of sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
The fundamental doctrine of sacrifice, because it all began, you know, when Adam and Eve left the Garden of Eden, they actually were commanded to give a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And why did they give a sacrifice? Because that is the process of sanctifying the blessings that the Lord has bestowed upon you.
Mm.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so when you've actually sacrificed it from a blessing, we're sanctifying the Constitution. We're sanctifying this union. We're sanctifying, you know, our liberties. We're sanctifying the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And so what he was basically calling the people to do was to give service unto him. And not feasting, not going around, you know, drinking and watching the game and I'll just say making ourselves completely oblivious, not even recognizing him in this great nation that he's blessed us with.
You know, GR, that's a completely different paradigm than what we've been doing for generations.
It is a completely different paradigm, which is why I'm trying to challenge this nation to recognize that Thanksgiving is the most sacred holiday that we actually have. This is far more sacred than the 4th of July and the Declaration of Independence. far more sacred in acknowledging all of the blessings that he gave us to get to this great document that has preserved our liberty all this time. Because the Declaration of Independence did not do that. The Declaration of Independence severed our relationship with Britain. Mm-hmm. And basically committed ourselves to go down and to forge a new nation. It didn't create the new nation. It committed us to forging this. And as we attempted, and this is what I've been saying, and this is, I can't be more plain about this. When we look at what this nation did, when you look at the history from that declaration, actually before we even formed the declaration, we had states that were petitioning the king. We were petitioning on the grievances and saying, we're Englishmen. We have these rights. You cannot deny us these rights. And ultimately, you know, it got worse and worse to where taxation became such a burden. I mean, we were paying 0.1% of what our revenues were.
Wow.
And that was unacceptable to the people of the colonies. Do you hear what I just said? 0.1%. I'm not saying 20%. You know, I'm not saying 10%. I'm saying 0.1% is about what those taxes amounted to.
Wow.
So the question is, who's been peeing in our gene pool? Because we have really lost sight of what those precious things were. As we actually moved away from, I'll just say, you know, the days of the revolution and, you know, finally worked through the Civil War, we actually, maybe we could say we got puffed up as a nation. Maybe we felt, you know, just like, look at us, who can stop us now? And this is when America actually started doing dances in the end zone. And it's only got, I mean, look at today. You know, we're such a riotous people. You know, I hear people, I hear Christians all the time talking about the need to repent and so forth. Thanksgiving, this is the time to do it and to actually to do it right. Does that make sense?
Of course it does.
So the question is, you know, as we look at, because Thanksgiving has really been transformed to this is the biggest bounty most people actually, you know, put before themselves with all of the different types of awesome foods from stuffings and sauces, you know, whether it's cranberry sauce or gravy or what have you, pies. I mean, the bounty is incredible because,
well,
go ahead.
Well, part of that probably goes back to the history of what people think of from Plymouth Rock as a harvest festival, okay, or gratitude for a plentiful harvest. Now, that didn't happen, okay, at Plymouth Rock, but somehow that's the idea. And so, you know, it's this time of year, it's harvest time. There is, you know, from an agrarian society, we began, I believe, celebrating. I think there's always been kind of a harvest celebration, and it's kind of rolled into that.
Yeah. Okay. So right. let me add this to this, because another part of the agrarian, you know, society that, you know, God created with man was that the large sacrifice of tithes.
Sure.
Tithes were paid. I mean, the Bible accounts for Abraham paying 1/10 of his tithes, but the tithes were paid at the end of the year when you harvested.
Correct.
And they made a real highlight of how obedient and how reverent Abraham was, because he not only paid 1/10 of his yield, he paid 1/10 of his spoils as well. So if he had 100 acres, he paid a full 10 acres of whatever the crop was, instead of, let's say, 10% or 15% of his crops were destroyed by a flood or something, or, you know, a little fire broke out. He still paid a full tenth of his yield, of the full body. In other words, out of the 100, because that's why it separates from what his yield and his spoils, yield and spoils. It points out that he still paid a full tenth on even his spoils. That's what that means. And so I'm just looking at, you know, we with our lips we do honor him, but with our hearts we have removed ourselves far from him. And these types of things that were established historically, and how we as a nation became stronger and stronger because we absolutely observed these holidays. We absolutely observed the spirit of these holidays. And it only takes a little while. And you know what? It probably all started with a really good intent. Doesn't it always start with a good intent? You know, let's make this a family thing. You know, not just a national, but we as a family, we're going to get together, we're going to go out and serve, and then when we're done serving and fasting and everything else, we'll end our fast with a little feast. Right?
How long do you think that the nation observed this the way the proclamation was given?
Well, I know that Lincoln actually called upon the nation for fast and prayer and humility. Fast, humility, and prayer, right? I think that's what they used to call it. And so it was past that when they did that, but I believe it was somewhere when the concerted efforts of becoming godless from the Civil War, by the time Teddy Roosevelt and the communist movement, you know, hit America, and, you know, he was hardcore into office. I think at that point in time, when we saw this opposing, it didn't mean that America became godless. It meant that our leadership, those who were allowed to climb into the ivory tower of our political leadership, were supporters of godlessness, and they knew that they couldn't just wipe out godless or God and worship of God in one quick swoop. They had to do it methodically, which is why in 1920, the Scopes trial, you know, actually took creation out of the school, even though the Bill of Rights states that Congress shall make no law respecting religion. And that's exactly what they did with the Scopes trial. And that's exactly what they did with Brown v. Board of Education. So as we look at how they actually started attacking us, it became evident as they started educating, inculcating people that secular meant godless. That we, you know, because the whole point of secularism in America was non-denominational. Mm-hmm. In other words, we respected all Christian faiths secularly. We were non-denominational as a government. And then all of a sudden, government transitioned from respecting and being non-denominational to being godless. And that right there was that pivotal point. Folks, the challenge is for you. The challenge is, how are we going to proceed with our Thanksgivings? I know we've already committed this year, but I ask you to seek, pray, and consider changing how we're doing Thanksgiving as a nation. God bless you. I'm G.R. Mobley with Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google Donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty.